the KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Welcome to ABQ Connect, Jim Williams. And I want you to cover those sensitive ears of the young people in your household today. We're going to be talking about minor domestic sex trafficking. Trafficking of all kinds, drug trafficking, human trafficking is a problem in our state. Shelly Rep, who's a good friend of mine. Shelly, I'm always amazed how long I've known you and all the things that you've done. And God's put on your heart. A heart for people that are on the street, a heart for people that are really hurting. And I'm just very thankful you're doing what you're doing.
Oh, I appreciate that, Jim. Thank you. I mean, you were a big part of my life as a teenager and kind of helping me when I first came to Christ, take those steps. I think, maybe contributed to me being, I don't know, a
well, if I could have any hand in encouraging you, I would be just very thankful.
Thank you.
So I appreciate you saying that. But I really do. I mean, we have a lot of people that are on the air and they talk about various things that you're doing. I've even gone into, I don't never mean to be chauvinistic or anything, but you bring two of your staff on and you're sitting here with them and you're talking about going out on Friday nights on the streets of Albuquerque. And
right.
So my brain, just confessing, here's three young women going out on the streets of Albuquerque, handing out food, water, clothing, and things to young people that are living on the streets of Albuquerque. The streets of Albuquerque is not a safe place.
Right, right.
Well, and here's the thing that bothers me more than anything. A lot of these young people are making a choice to live on the street. I don't think they're making a choice to be trafficked. That's an awful, right. Terrible thing, which we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
But they would rather live on the streets than live in necessarily foster care.
Right.
And that's a comment about something hideous, and I don't know what it is.
Well, I think that there's a lot of different ways you can go with that. And so when we look at young people who are choosing to live on the street, where they could live in foster care, they could live in a home, that's a pretty big statement about what's happening to families within our community. In fact, right now in like the legislature, Jim, there are, gosh, like 12 or 14 bills right now that are addressing the child welfare system, not just, you know, human trafficking that we're talking about, but just the failures of our child welfare system in so many different ways. And so I think when we talk about, you know, these unhoused youth, these young people who are surviving on the streets in any way they can, I mean, honestly, Jim, that points back to us as a community. And what are we doing about valuing our children and supporting families who have needs?
I've said this before. You're not a complainer. You're not a, hey, how come we're not doing anything? You are a, look, I'd like to do this and this and this and this and this. And you're not going to get your feelings hurt if somebody says no.
Oh, not at all. Yeah.
But we're going to talk about, for example, House Bill 86.
Right.
That was the only real bill that mentioned human trafficking. And I read it.
Right.
And after many, many times of interviewing you, I kind of was anticipating what you would say today. Yeah, this is going to help, but why doesn't it do everything we need?
Right. Well, what we've seen is this is a variation of a bill that we've been trying to pass for 5 years. And so essentially when that bill, as it was originally written in consultation with the Attorney General's office, with local law enforcement, with victims' advocates, working with this population, it was this really robust bill that really addressed this crime of sex trafficking specifically and the danger of traffickers and the danger of people who are purchasing sex. And so last year when we tried to pass, go ahead. Yeah.
So, Shelly, you are going, and I love it.
Sorry.
But
What did I forget?
So, I know you, and you've taught me a lot about this. So, what I wanted to do is slow down and talk about a couple things. Like,
sure.
For example, you said in cooperation with the Attorney General's office.
Yes.
Well, a lot of people in the state of New Mexico don't know that the Attorney General's office is actually doing a lot to try to fight this. But they don't, like, here's some of the problems.
Yeah.
From law enforcement perspective, it's difficult to accuse a trafficker.
Right.
Because they can say, oh, well, this person's a prostitute. I don't have anything to do with them, right? There's no connection to be made.
Right. They can say that.
And there are consumers, which to be honest with you, I would just as soon have photos and publish those in the paper. And, you know, I'd love it if people were convicted of their sin.
Yeah.
Just as I have been in many cases. Yeah. I've never participated in human trafficking, but what I'm saying is in my sin, in my life, I have actually been confronted on various issues. Right. I've been embarrassed. I've been humiliated, and God has used that to change me.
Right.
In this case, I kind of like to take photos of people that are on the street, and you can on any given weekend tell us exactly where this is happening.
Oh, it is easy. It's easy to see. I think in looking at this, the Attorney General has absolutely been working since about 2010 on addressing human trafficking, and that's through a couple of different, you know, election cycles and all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's not that same person, but their office. Mm-hmm. They have an office of human trafficking that they are working on addressing this. And so we've seen this systematic, attempt through the Attorney General's office there with law enforcement, especially BCSO, as far as local law enforcement, really being very specific about trying to address this. We see this with Homeland Security investigations, working on addressing, and even the FBI. We've got a very robust FBI office here in Albuquerque that works collaboratively and has a law enforcement task force specifically around human trafficking. So we see a lot of these efforts, but they can only go so far if legislation isn't going to pass, or in looking at not only just the legislative side, Jim, but looking back to what you were talking about with a trafficker, where a trafficker who we could call a pimp, another term, could say, well, she's a prostitute. I just happen to know her, or I'm just trying to protect her or help her. Well, the other thing is that victim absolutely is very unlikely to testify against that trafficker. So even if that person gets picked up and law enforcement is talking to them, they have to be at a place in their life where they feel like they can actually even testify against that trafficker, which means they have to have a place to go for safety. They have to see where there's resources. How are they going to be able to be taken care of? So all of those are really, really big pieces that we have to also look at within this whole picture of human trafficking.
So here's the thing that's paradoxical in my mind. So let's say, by the way, I think you would agree with this. We're very thankful for our state legislators.
Absolutely.
They don't get paid a bunch of money. They're taking away time from their jobs and their business. And, we know they're there for us. They're working for us. Now, having said that, they're not perfect. They have little things that they believe, and maybe not all those are clear.
Sure.
Here's the part that I can't understand. You're talking about the New Mexico Attorney General's office. You're talking about Bernalillo County Sheriff's Office, one department of law enforcement throughout the state. And there are many that are concerned about this issue.
Absolutely.
A lot of people have made arrests. They've been dealing with people. They know what they're talking about. So if I'm a legislator, I want the recommendations of the Attorney General's office.
Right?
I want law enforcement. I even want attorneys to come and say, why should we let these guys out of jail?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Even though I might not agree with that. And the point is not bringing people in that you agree with, but bringing people in that know what they're talking about.
Right.
You've done that.
We have.
And they don't, for some reason, they won't. Why is this politicized, I guess is my real question.
Well, you know, it really does come down to, I think, people's maybe personal investments in different areas of our community. It also comes into looking at, are there potential civil rights that maybe some of our legislators are trying to protect? For example, one of the things we had to pull out of our original legislative package we had put together was something called SORNA. And what that is that's the Sexual Offenders Registry Network, which is if you are a sex offender, you have to be on that list, which means you can't live within 500 feet of a school and, you know, all of these different things, which can make it really difficult to get a job and it can make it difficult to find housing. However, if you are looking at some somebody who is specifically, if they are trying to purchase children for sex, that seems like that is an applicable thing to be in that legislation. But we were advised to take that out of that legislative package because the voices for protecting the civil rights of sexual offenders was too strong, they felt, for us to be able to get that legislation to pass. And they suggested that perhaps that's why it hadn't passed for 3 of the 5 years we tried. So we did that last year. We pulled SORNA out, still didn't pass. And so we've even like weakened it even further, and not weakened it. I mean, it's still legislation addressing the crime of human trafficking and things that can be done for the victims and setting up legal cause for people who are traffickers to be sentenced. But it's not a huge, robust piece of legislation.
I noticed they wanted to make the definition of trafficking fit into the definition of racketeering.
Yeah, that is actually really common with trafficking. It's across the United States with racketeering.
So this is all, this is favorable, is what you're saying.
Yes. And the reason is because it gives them more points of investigation and arrest when they're putting it with racketeering. And so racketeering is a weird kind of term and piece of legislation because it really does have a lot to do with defrauding people and gain on in unethical ways. And so having racketeering is not a bad thing to have associated with this legislation.
If you could have 3 things that you'd like to have done with New Mexico legislation, not necessarily this session, but just what 3 things would you like primarily to help stop human trafficking in New Mexico?
So one of the things is I think we need to increase sentencing of those who are purchasing sex. So that is really largely unaddressed. And that does go to community level within different communities. But we could have state legislation putting a requirement within there. And so if we were to look at legislation and address that so that purchasers knew they were also going to be in trouble, instead of if a police officer comes up on a situation, they either just let them go or it's like a little slap on the wrist. That would be, I think, an important thing for a community to address. We do need to have the legislation addressing traffickers and penalties for traffickers. We also need to have a legislation that's addressing the age of people who are trafficked. So currently in the state, if you are over the age of 14, you basically fall, it's almost as if you were 18 years old. So the sentencing is minimal compared to somebody if they were, let's say, under the age of 14 and trafficked, which is terrible to think about a 12-year-old being trafficked. Yeah. However, in our state, if you are under 18, you are still considered a child. And so the sentencing should be as a child. And so I think those would be the 3 things that I would look at addressing.
Well, I think those are amazing, and I, as far as I could interpret, that's kind of a nonpartisan perspective.
It really should be, right?
And amongst this, as I'm listening to you talking about this, I'm thinking a lot of us have in our minds the customers of prostitution, the people that are taking advantage of children that are offered, you know, a 12-year-old is trafficked. I mean, that has all kinds of just unbelievable things in my brain that I can't imagine how awful that is. But the people that are the customers are not maybe who we would imagine.
Right?
Who are they?
Well, that's the thing, Jim. They're kind of across the board. They hit every socioeconomic demographic there is. What we have seen is that purchasers can own very successful businesses. We have seen leaders in churches as purchasers. We have seen almost a barter system of somebody who maybe is unhoused, who is exchanging sex with somebody so that they can have some sort of other, you know, necessity that they might need. And so when we look at this, there's not any special specific socioeconomic aspect to who these purchasers are.
And all these people don't live in a certain part of our city either, right?
No, no, they absolutely don't. And especially when you're looking at people who are purchasing sex that have a higher socioeconomic demographic. So somebody who maybe does own a successful business, but then we have all of these online forums that you can go on and you can set up those dates and have the girl brought to you, or you can meet them. And so it is such an easy thing to do these days that it's not hard for somebody who has some dollars to drop, but it's also not hard for somebody who doesn't have a lot of dollars to drop.
Yeah. Shelley Rep is the director of the New Mexico Dream Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Their website is nmdreamcenter.org. You can get a lot of information there on their website. Obviously, they are a nonprofit organization. They need some help, actually, because they've had some events of the last 6 or 8 weeks that were not so fun. And we're going to talk to Shelley about those when we come back. Shelley Rep, director of the New Mexico Dream Center, will be right back with us after these messages.
ABQ Connect.
Shelley Rep, the director of the New Mexico Dream Center, is in studio. If you've got young people hanging around the radio today, you might not want to listen to the show. We're talking about minor domestic sex trafficking. We're talking about young people that are living on the streets of Albuquerque. Shelley Rep's organization does a lot to reach out to them, has all kinds of services available. We'll talk about those in this segment. But before we do that, we want to finish up our discussion. We did talk about HB 86. You said it doesn't go quite far enough, but it is a positive bill. It is going to help in some ways fight human trafficking. And then you mentioned another bill, HB 73. And it's hard for me. If I go to nmlegis.gov, which is the New Mexico Legislature website, and I always search for bills by keywords.
Right.
So I'll put in like human trafficking or whatever, because I don't know. And so I only came up with the HB 86, but you told me HB 73 during the break was another one that might help.
Right, absolutely. So it is not a bill that is tied specifically to human trafficking, but it is tied to minors and specifically children who have survived sexual abuse or molestation, sexual assault. And what it does is it extends that statute of limitations for them in reporting this crime or seeking legal advocacy within this. And I think that's a really important thing, because I look at so many of our clients who were trafficked as 12, 13, 14 years old, and especially if they were on the streets or in really dangerous situations in their homes, to have the capacity to even consider addressing this before that statute of limitations runs out is just, it's a lot. There's so much trauma involved in something like this. So this is actually a piece of legislation we would love to see continue and pass, so that these young people who've survived horrific things have some sort of legal ability as they age into an adult.
As you're talking about this, I'm thinking about, again, an awful thing that you deal with. It's called familial trafficking.
Yes.
Where families are actually trafficking their children or their brothers and sisters that are young.
Yeah.
In order to make money. So this would probably go a long way to allowing them to prosecute people.
Absolutely. Jim, our first familial trafficking victim we had was 36 years old, which is way older than our kind of average of client age. But she had been trafficked from the time she was 9 until she escaped her trafficker, who was her father, at 36 years old. So when you think about that time, you know, within there and just the trauma that she had been through, she was familial trafficked for a long, long, long time. And because she was older when she got out, her, you know, she definitely was within that statute of limitations. But we have many young people who were trafficked as younger children who are on their own by 17 years old and have no idea about what they can do. Even when you talk to them about those legal things, it's really complicated, because this was your mother, or this was your grandfather, or this was your favorite uncle. And so looking at having to bring legal action against a family member can be really challenging just in general, much less somebody who has survived some sort of, you know, sexual abuse or sex trafficking, anything like that.
Tell us about, you don't have to be specific, obviously you're not going to tell us any names, but this person that you mentioned that's 36, are there a lot of positive outcomes through your work?
So there are. Now, this gal is living independently. She actually got married. She's in her 40s now. And she had, you know, she had really struggled with substance use when she first came out because it was just too painful. It was painful to think about. It was really hard for her to feel like she could trust a therapist. And so she really numbed using opioids for a long time. And so there was, you know, gosh, a couple of years where we were just hoping that she would just make it through the year. You know, we're just concerned about that. And so our goal was to be able to provide as much stability as possible. But she did end up going into a program to address that substance use and was able to come off of substances and has really done well. She also is just absolutely an avid believer. She attends a local church here in the Albuquerque area and gets a lot of support from church people there. We had even kind of talked with her and walked with her when she first started going back to church about looking at what are safe places you can go? Because it's really easy for somebody who's been exploited and victimized to be re-victimized without them realizing that. And so she was able to get involved in a women's ministry that just really kind of came around her and supported her. And so that group helped her thrive. So beyond what we did as New Mexico Dream Center, as far as our services, the church showed up for her and really helped her to be the person that she is now.
How can the faith community, the people listening to our show today, help you and what you're doing?
So there's a lot of different ways. One of the ways, which would be amazing, is for people who are interested and willing to go through our training, because we're not going to just go, yeah, come on in. Look, here are our children. But who are willing to kind of develop these mentorship relationships and bring them to church. We have another gal who actually attends here, you know, this is on a Calvary campus. Mm-hmm. She attends Calvary and she has a great relationship with us. And she picks up one of our young people who is in our programming and brings her to church every Sunday. And we don't compensate her for that. You know, she does that and schedules that with this young person because they want to go to church. We don't have enough staffing, Jim, to be able to do that for everybody. Mm-hmm. So it really does take the faith community. And when I say the faith community, I mean the faith community, because we have some young people who were raised in like the Catholic faith and they want to go to Mass. And so we need people who are involved in the Catholic community to be willing to do that. So it's liturgical, it's across the board with what our young people are interested in, and we want to support them in that. And so we love when churches can help in that way. They're also really great for work days in case they ever want to help out around a facility.
And you have you need people in the facilities, and maybe this is a good time for us to talk about the various things that you offer as far as services.
Yeah.
You have the Harbor spoken for, Eliza Jane House, the Lighthouse Outreach, and now more recently Casa de Mariposa. So I want to know when you're going to start the basketball program for old guys.
You know, I'm going to have to pray about that one, Jim, because I haven't heard from God about the basketball for old guys. I know my husband would say, when are you going to start the gymnastics for old guys? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. What do we do with you old guys?
Well, the point is you're doing a lot for a lot of different people. So talk to us a little bit about your services. And I also want people to be directed to your website, which is nmdreamcenter.org. There is a way to give securely.
Yes.
And you might want to think about supporting the organization financially. You also are helping everybody, regardless of their faith.
Exactly. So faith is, I believe, as you know, the CEO, that I am not going to withhold services from someone because they don't profess Jesus. I feel like one of the best ways to show the love and the mercy and the grace and the beauty of Jesus is by being there in a no strings attached way and being there consistently. I think those things point to the character of God in so many different ways when you're not there saying, okay, well, if you do this, then we're going to go ahead and give you, you know, this benefit or whatever. So we are very much serving anybody regardless of their faith or if they don't feel like they even have a faith. But what we see is then these transforming and courageous conversations where our young people will literally ask, especially at the harbor, like, why do you do this? Like, what? Why? I don't get it. And it's because of Jesus. And so we have our staff who are able to say, well, I'm here because I believe God's called me here and I want to be, you know. And so when you're doing those things, you're taking away this kind of transactional relationship and making it more of a relationship that's built on the value of the person.
You've also shared in the past something I found very profound, and that is when somebody's being trafficked, you can talk to them about anything you want.
Yep.
Their favorite sport, Jesus Christ, whatever. They aren't going to be able to think about anything except surviving.
Exactly.
Until you are, through your ministry, able to help them get into a safe place.
Exactly. Well, and I mean, if you think about it, when you are in the middle of something that's horrible or terrible, it is just about getting through that day. Mm. And in a trafficking situation, that really is it. In fact, we look at this concept. It's not a Christian concept, but it really lines up well with God's word that is called Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And so it really goes and it says, if you don't have a safe place to sleep, if you don't have food in your belly, if you don't have safety, then any of this kind of higher level thinking specifically about seeking God, then you can't respond in a way that is actually meaningful. And I think that that's where a lot of times when people are looking at how are we doing missions work, any of that stuff, not that you don't provide and do all of that, but it almost becomes coercive because it's like, hey, if you say these magic words of Jesus, come into my heart, I'm going to now feed you breakfast. Like, that's coercive, Jim. That's not reality. Yeah,
that's not love.
That's not love. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And especially with somebody who is trafficked, they are coerced all the time into situations where they have to then have this particular behavior. So it's like, you do this or I'm going to beat you up. You do that or I'm going to find your mom and I'm going to beat your mom up. And so in this whole, kind of coercive environment, how can you have the freedom to make an actual real decision about something? And we don't want to be cliff. Like, I can't, traffickers do that, not New Mexico Dream Center.
And so what you do is you meet their needs, emotional,
yes,
physical, you even help them if they need to take a shower, if they need to get on a computer, if they would like to know their social security number and get a driver's license, you have a caseworker that does that.
Yep.
So you meet all these needs. And then, as you mentioned earlier, they ask you,
right,
about, absolutely, why you're doing this. What about your faith? And so I love that. Shelley Rep with the New Mexico Dream Center is with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about the various components of their ministry, serving people in a lot of different areas in the community of people that are being trafficked. It's amazing. We'll be back on ABQ Connect right after this.
ABQ Connect.
Thank you to Tayshawn for getting us in and out of the breaks. We appreciate you engineering the program today. Shelley Rep with the New Mexico Dream Center in studio. In this section, we're going to talk about the programs of the New Mexico Dream Center and all the ways you're trying to serve people. I want our audience, if you would, and I know y'all have different reasons for listening, but I think largely people want to know what's going on, what kind of ministries, what kind of problems are we addressing, who's really doing good work. And so I really appreciate that perspective. But think about how you might, maybe you could volunteer in, yeah, one of these areas, and Shelley will give you good training and all that. Maybe you'd want to support financially one aspect of this. Could people give to a certain program?
They absolutely can. They 100% can. In fact, we've got some people who are really passionate about one of our, kind of upcoming programs, which is Casa de Mariposa. So they were a small ministry here in the Albuquerque area that had approached us and said, hey, we're really not capable of running this anymore. It's getting to be a little bit too much for our folks. So would you be interested in acquiring us? So we just finished through some of the legal stuff around all of that. And we've had people reach out to us and say, hey, we believe in what Casa de Mariposa is doing. Can we give specifically to that? So it's absolutely a resounding yes. If there's something that pricks your heart around one of our programs.
Well, we had you know, Casa de Mariposa was a ministry on our station. They came on frequently and talked about how they were taking care of mothers who, you know, couldn't necessarily take care of their pregnancies on their own. So they were providing housing and health recommendations and support through the whole pregnancy, and then even support after the babies were born.
Right. Absolutely.
So, you know, there's a lot that you guys are doing. Talk to us about, I've been to the harbor.
Yes.
And Shelley, as we're talking about some of this stuff, somebody came into the harbor twice in the past 6 or 8 months and kind of broke down the doors and did some awful things, which cost money.
Yeah.
I know you had insurance, but it also cost money.
Yeah.
It cost in services, too. You weren't able to provide some things. So tell us about the harbor and what that's
about. So the harbor is a drop-in center off of East Central. So it's basically Central and Zuni for unhoused youth. And so it's available for people who are 21 years old and under, who aren't housed, so we would say homeless, or are very precariously housed, like they're not in a situation that's safe and secure. And at the harbor, we open up on Wednesdays starting at 2 o'clock. And on Wednesdays and Thursdays, we're open from 2 o'clock until 8 p.m. For walk-up services. And then on Fridays, we open up at 2 o'clock, but we don't close on Fridays. We stay open all night long, and then we close at 10 a.m. on Saturday. So we're piloting this overnight aspect to drop in. But when a young person comes into the drop-in center, they can take showers, they can get a hot meal, they can get hygiene, clothing, do their laundry, connect with one of our staff to kind of start getting steered back into services. And we started the program like this, Jim, because in 2017, I had three clients on my caseload who were all young. They were young adults, 19 to 23 years old. All three of them had been trafficked from the same street corner in Albuquerque as unhoused youth. So they were three girls, didn't know each other, different traffickers, but they were all trafficked from Wyoming and Central by these different traffickers. And a big piece of their story was they didn't have a safe place to go. They didn't know where they could go to get services or resources or what to do. And they absolutely were preyed upon by these traffickers out there in Albuquerque. And so we wanted to have an option for people who were unhoused on the street to have a safety net. And that's why we designed the harbor the way it is.
And you've had amazing outcomes.
Yeah, we've had hundreds and hundreds of kids go through the harbor. And with that, one of the things that can happen at the harbor is we can actually screen for human trafficking indicators. And if they screen for those indicators, it kind of opens up a whole bunch of other services that they can have. But they have to volunteer for the screening. Like, you know, we're not like, to come in, you must screen. I mean, I already talked about that coercion piece in the last segment. Mm-hmm. So out of all of the kids, not all of them have screened, but out of the kids who have screened, we are at 98% have screened for human trafficking indicators. We've only had a few kids not screened for those indicators. And to be perfectly honest, we just think they didn't want to disclose that it was, you know, because they can be kind of challenging situations and questions. And so that's kind of what we've seen at the harbor. These young people,
they may have good reason not to be in their, in their house they were born to.
Right.
I mean, there may be abuse. There may be familial trafficking, whatever it might be. So they have left there. They find themselves on the streets of Albuquerque. Harbor's a place for them to go and be. And I know that there's also some legal problems with providing housing to minors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know you've been addressing that. That's something the legislature could probably help you with,
too. That would be, and in looking for funding, you know, around that. The city council has been working on that. And actually, the city of Albuquerque has an RFP open for some youth housing. And so I think we're saying youth housing. I think it's 18 to 25 years old. So it's still not addressing people who are under 18. And that's because that's a really hard nut to crack because they technically should be under the supervision of someone.
Yes.
And so, but here, the dangers are there. Like, Jim, here's the thing. There was a news report not that long ago about a kid who was kept here in Albuquerque in a chicken coop in her backyard. Like, a kid like that who has survived something like that, you know, being on the streets could be an easier option than having to live in a chicken coop and, you know, hopefully being able to get out at some point.
Some people listening to statements like that, they may think this problem is overwhelming. But again, you've seen in your ministry lots of positive outcomes for people.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that includes coming to faith, but that's not a requirement of you helping them.
Right.
You are sharing, your organization is sharing faith, taking care of people. You're a witness. I mean, your service is a witness of Christ.
Right. Absolutely.
So I think that's pretty amazing. Tell me about Spoken For in the Eliza Jane House.
Absolutely. So Spoken For is our programming of what we would call also direct services. So these are like our case managers, our volunteers who are working specifically with anybody who comes into our programming at all. And so it's helping get people connected to services if they need like therapy services or they need transportation, helping put together an individual service plan so that that person can kind of determine what are my goals? What is it that I'm trying to accomplish? And so all of that falls under this category of Spoken For. So we have some people who are in housing with us and we have some people who are not in housing with us, but still need services. We had one person who was like, I was trafficked as a minor. I've got a job. I'm working, but I need to find out some stuff in my background because I think there's been like identity theft and fraud in my background, and I don't know how to do that. And so that was something that fell under that Spoken For umbrella, where we could help her and get her connected to the right people to go, what has happened? What's going on in your name and your social security number, so to speak, and what can we do to help her? And so Spoken For is pretty broad in that it really is the group of people who are interacting with our human trafficking survivors. And a big part of Spoken For is the Eliza Jane House. So the Eliza Jane House is New Mexico's only human trafficking specific shelter. So it is a shelter specifically for those who have survived trafficking, and it's set up in a way for those coming in to establish stability so they can go into further housing and independence without having to maybe learn some of those hard lessons and therefore lose their apartment. So it focuses a lot on life skills. It focuses on education. It focuses on you as a person. How can you be healthy so that when you're living out there independently, you're not maybe moving in your trafficker or a bad boyfriend, or you lose your job and you stop paying rent. And so it really focuses on this aspect of how you can live an independent life in a safe way.
And when you say life services, you're also talking about this is how you open up a bank account.
Jim, I can't even tell you. I think we've had maybe 5 clients in the last probably 3 years that actually had bank accounts. None of them did. They didn't. And so just this concept of even paying your rent is a big deal. Bank accounts are a big deal.
The New Mexico Dream Center is a ministry here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Their website is nmdreamcenter.org. Shelley Rep is their founder and director. Their phone number is 505-900-3833, or you can go to nmdreamcenter.org and find out more details about what they're doing. When we come back, we're going to talk about how they do outreach, and that's the scary part to me. I shared earlier today when I see these young people out on the street, and this is where I'd like to see like 1,000 volunteers going out on Thursdays and Fridays, because if we flooded the streets with loving Christian people in areas of the city that are most prominent for, I'm going to say public trafficking, because it really is kind of public.
Yeah.
I think we'd run those people off.
I'd love it.
Just by our mere presence,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
No threats, no...
No baseball bats, Jim.
Yeah, nothing insinuated there. Just the presence of God's people would do a lot. So think about as you're listening today how you might volunteer, how you might want to fit into this. Shelley's one of those people that she's going to be training and doing great things. And so we'll talk about outreach and a little bit more detail about how you can be involved. So stay with us on ABQ Connect.
Live.
Shelley Rep with us here on ABQ Connect. Jim Williams with you today. I'm actually going to be with you all week. Our general manager, Steve Ryman, is at a conference learning all about broadcasting. Now, Steve has been in broadcasting for like 35 years. No, but here's what I appreciate about him. He never believes he knows everything. He's always wanting to learn. He's always wanting to hear God's voice. And so I pray that he's got to have a little fun too, right?
Yeah.
It's a little break.
I hope so.
But I just hope he's you know, he's going to come back, and the things he brings back are going to really bless the station, bless the outreach that we have with people all over. Shelley, during the break, you told me you actually have an outreach coordinator position open. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Jim, when we started the show, you were talking about how when I had brought my outreach gal over here, and you were like, oh my gosh, what is going on with these women going out in the street? Well, our outreach gal has moved on to a different ministry, a different organization, and is doing great there. We still talk with her a lot. But we are actually looking to hire somebody in that role. And so it is a part-time role, but it is somebody who then coordinates our different outreach efforts that are primarily volunteer run. And so most of our outreach is through, you know, specifically church volunteers in a lot of different ways. And so we are looking to hire that. You can actually find that on our website. So if you just even go to our homepage and scroll to the bottom, it'll say jobs. Click on jobs and it will show you what our current openings are and then kind of what that pay scale is within that. So we're looking to hire.
So Shelley, there's a reason that a 12-year-old living on the streets of Albuquerque, and it's pretty tough for them to make a living.
Yeah.
So they get picked up by traffickers. They get promised all kinds of things. You've taught us terms like leash drugs.
Yes.
Where a trafficker will get somebody hooked on drugs, and then in order to get a fix, you have to do this and this and this. Awful manipulation there. It's unfathomable. And there's, you've talked to us about how children are enticed into trafficking online.
Yep.
You mentioned the ghost unit of Bernalillo County. They actually go online and pose as, you know, a young 12-year-old girl or boy. And boy, this is not exclusive to girls either.
It is not. It is absolutely not. And I think that's one of the things I would say. We still have a majority that are girls, but it's not even this huge majority. There is a lot of looking for purchasing sex from young
boys. How does your outreach team earn the right to be heard by somebody that's on the street? Because young people especially, they're afraid of being reported to their parents and sent back home.
Right. So here's the trick. This is the secret sauce. The secret sauce is relationships, and relationships are built through consistency. So the importance of why we go out on Friday nights is not because it's a Friday night, but it's because that's where we started. And so the more we're out on the street, it's the same faces who are seeing the same faces on the street. So you develop a rapport and you develop trust. And so I think that is a super important thing for us to realize, is that consistency is key. The other thing is that when we are on the street, we are not trying to like just cherry pick certain people. And the reason is because that could be dangerous for them and it could be dangerous for us. So when we're out there, we are offering food, water, and hygiene to every single person we encounter. And so we are caring for the masses. And as you develop the relationship with the masses, you can say, hey, we've got the harbor. It's open right now, just up here for young people who are on the street. Have you seen any of those young people around? Is there someplace that we can get them this flyer? And so they're willing to talk to you. They're willing to protect you. They're willing to give you information because you're willing to have a relationship with them. And I think, you know, that's how God does stuff with us, is through relationships.
I remember a story you had to have shared 4 or 5 years ago on this program, and you said that you were talking, or someone on your team was talking, with a 40 or 50-year-old man, and giving him water and some different things, and then saying, hey, have you seen any young people? And you expressed that this person immediately saw themselves as helping somebody else.
Exactly.
And went immediately and got some young people over to you.
Yep. No, that is exactly it. They were like, and we had encountered them and they knew we were there every Friday night. And that was a story shared by Chantel, who had been doing our outreach. And they saw, you know, despite the tragic situation and circumstances they were in, they saw that they could potentially help another person. And the nice thing about that, Jim, is then that he was able to even vouch for us. It wasn't just this, you know, like cold call kind of thing, walking up to some kids who probably didn't want to talk to us, but somebody that they already knew on the street who was vouching for us as a good organization, that we're not out there trying to do anything weird.
Shelley, you believe in the foster care and adoption system.
I do.
But you think it can be a lot better.
There's, Jim, it is broken, and it is harming children in so many ways. And so looking at addressing the oversight of the foster system is huge. So if you want to look at legislation, they are listening to something that's called an ombudsman bill, which would be about accountability for our Children, Youth, and Families Department. It would be outside of CYFD, but it would provide oversight and accountability. And we desperately need accountability. Where there is not accountability, we know that chaos and disruption reigns. And that is what we're seeing in CYFD.
Well, I know that if you want to be a foster parent,
yep,
the state will help you afford that child. And for that, you have to get some training and some other things. But
yes,
as soon as you mention money,
yeah,
there are people that come into it with wrong motivations and they never really care for the children.
Right. Oh, yeah.
How do you solve that problem?
So I think a lot of that, again, comes to oversight. So I know when my husband Dan and I did foster care, and we would have home visits. And with that home visit, somebody was in your home. Well, when COVID hit, there really weren't home visits. Mm. And then we saw CYFD falling apart. So there's not even enough workers where you're really able to have these really good home visits. That doesn't mean that stuff won't slip through the cracks. But when you have somebody coming in and looking at things pretty regularly and talking with those kids, it gives them a chance to express what's happening. We've had kids who said that they would have beans for every single meal while they were in foster care. And that was just how they lived, was on beans. And we're amazed when they came to our house and we're like, so here's the pantry, you know, here's what the menu is. Just don't eat any of the food prep for the next meal. But other than that, eat what you want. And that was like a huge thing for that young person.
Yeah, that had to be freeing them up. I remember working at the Boys Club many, many years ago, and yeah, a lot of the kids didn't have anything. And if they won a basketball game, and by the way, I always took them even if they lost.
Good.
I'd always take them over and get them an icy at the 7-11.
Nice.
Now, the parents weren't too happy because some of those icies were as big as the 7-year-olds that were drinking
right,
them.
Right.
But nevertheless, it was something fun for them, and they felt recognized.
Yes.
And rewarded. So I know that you're really just trying to communicate love and care for people. What do you need from our audience? Again, how can they help? How can they volunteer? How can they financially support you?
If they're interested in volunteering, they can email at volunteer@nmdreamcenter.org, volunteer@nmdreamcenter.org. That goes straight to our volunteer coordinator. We do need funding. So at the beginning of the year, we had two break-ins that broke our glass door twice within 9 days, and a window, and then some stuff was stolen, but we did have to close services down. So funding is always something that is key. So we are a nonprofit, so donations go a long ways with us, and we appreciate that. So that's something that is always helpful. If you've got a business or an organization, a group of some kind, and want to do some sort of a drive, we feed a lot of teenagers. And so I need pantry drives pretty regularly to fill up that pantry with, you know, chips and cookies and pudding and all sorts of things that teenagers want to eat. And so you can have some sort of a drive that goes directly to the people we're trying to help. So those are just three pretty easy ways that somebody can jump in and get more information about helping out.
Yeah, if you got a women's group or a men's group or something, put together a little project, help bring some snacks and things to the harbor.
Yes.
I know you also, a lot of these people that come in, they have one change of clothing.
Yep. Yep.
And there's another thing you could bring in is some
Yep, absolutely.
Clothing.
We have a clothing closet. And with that, new underwear, new underclothes, not anything used like that. We take gently used regular clothes, but they need socks and underwear, Jim, and bras and panties. And
yeah.
New stuff.
I love that. Shelley Rep, thank you for joining us. We
Thanks
appreciate
for having
you.
Me today.